Okay, today's daf is Yivama's daf Ayin Vav. And Ayin Vav Mabeis gets into the sugya of David HaMelech, as we have the Mishnah, that who is the one allowed to marry, who is not allowed to marry. So the Mishnah goes into Ammon and Moab. We know Ammon and Moab are usher, the males are usher to marry in to the Kahal forever. Yisur and Isur Olam. Their wives, Nikvosehen, Mutaros Miyad. The wives, the women, Ammonis and Moabis, they are allowed to marry in. As we know, of course, Rus comes from a Rus HaMoaviyah, and Na'ama, the mother of Rechavam, is an Ammonite. So they are Mutar Miyad, Mitzri and Adomi, right? Those nations are only usher to the third generation, Vechulu. So this is the background, of course, to the story of David HaMelech and his lineage. That's what we'll talk about today, the lineage of David HaMelech. The Gemara here quotes the story from this David and Shaul, where David HaMelech fells the giant, kills Goliath. And Shaul is wondering, who is that? Who is that child, man? Who is that person who felled the giant? And David HaMelech, as we know, the Gemara goes into, was already kind of knew who he was, because he knew he was somebody special. Because even though David HaMelech was much smaller than Shaul, Shaul was Mishichmo Olamala, as the Pasuk describes, but the armor that Shaul wore, he had put on David to protect him from Goliath. And magically and miraculously, it went and became the size of David HaMelech. So he knew there was something special about this warrior. He just didn't know, right? And that's what the Gemara goes into. How did he know? How did he not know? Because after he felt the giant, he said, who is that? The Gemara says, what do you mean? He didn't know. Did he know? He know him? So, no, he was asking about his father. Avua Kamashal. He didn't know who his father was. Yishai was very famous. No, he didn't know whether he was from Peretz or he was from Zarach. Right? He knew, didn't know whether he was destined to be royalty or not. And it goes into wearing the clothes. But then we get into the main discussion of our topic today, and that is Doeg HaAdomi. Doeg HaAdomi comes in onto the scene and says, you're asking whether he could be fit to be the king or not? You're asking, did he come from Zerach? Did he come from Peretz? Let me tell you, maybe he can't even marry a Jew. Why? Because his great-great-grandmother was a Moabite, coming from Rus, right? By time it took us to be Rus HaMoaviyah. And we know the Mishnah Yivava says that Ammon and Moab are out. So Avner stands up for David and answers and says, wait, no, it's only the males. Right? You didn't finish reading the Mishnah. Ammoni v'lo Ammonis, Moabi v'lo Moabis. So Doeg answers back, what, only the males are under the Isurim? So what about a Mamzer? Mamzer v'lo Mamzeres? You're going to tell me it only applies to the males? Why is Ammon and Moab any different? So Avner answers, no. Mamzer ksiv mumzor. Mamzer is mumzor, a strange mum, which would apply to anybody. The Ritva here says mum of the mother, right? So at least the mother too. So Doeg says, what about Mitzri? Mitzri below Mitzris? Does it only apply to the males? No, no, no. There's a reason why only the males are out and not the by Ammon and Moab, there's a reason why only the males would be out and not the females. Why? Because they were the ones that didn't take out bread and water for you when you were coming out of the into the desert, and they should have saved you because their ancestor was Lot, and Avram saved Lot, and they should have given you basic hakaras hatov, lokidmu eschem alechem avamayim. But only the men are the ones that usually go out. Dakash lish lekadem, lo dakash lish lekadem. So Doeg persists and says, what do you mean? The men should have brought the men bread and water, and the women should have brought the women. And Ishtik, finally, there's no answer. So there's a thick silence amongst the people there, wondering, are we going to save David HaMelech? What's going to be? He wasn't David HaMelech yet. He was just David ben Yishai. Immediately, v'yomer HaMelech, and the king says, Sha'al ata ben Mizeh, find out who this is, and nis'alma menu halacha. Nobody knew, so they ran to the Beis Medrash, and the Beis Medrash reminded them, and it's only the males. I went back all the kashas of Doeg. Amasa stands up on a chair and says, don't ask me any kashas. I have a mesorah from Shmuel HaNavi. Shmuel HaNavi says, it's only the males, not the females, and David HaMelech is allowed, this man, this warrior, is allowed to marry in, and eventually he will be the king. Fine. So when the dust settles, the lineage of David HaMelech allows him to marry in. But the question, and we've spoken about this before, the question is, why did we need this in the first place? Why did Hashem orchestrate the events that David HaMelech's past was going to be rooted in this cloudiness? Right? Why was there even controversy at all? Why did David HaMelech come from the most pristine and pure lineage that our religion has to offer? Right? The last parak of Kiddushin. Asara Yuchsin, right? Yuchsin, Yichus plays a role in Yadus. So why wouldn't David HaMelech have the greatest Yichus in the world? And it's not only this story of Rus HaMoaviyah, right? We know the pattern of murkiness is even earlier in David HaMelech's lineage, right? It starts way back, right? We have Lot and his daughters, right? That's where originally, you know, comes from, right? And we know that the Psukim in Perek Yutes of Breishis, the older and the younger, and Amon and Moav, Me'av, right? This is Rus HaMoaviyah, Me'av, from the father. This is David HaMelech's ancestor, right? And then it continues with Yehuda and Tamar. We have in Perek Lamed Ches and Parshas Vayeshev, and we know everything that happens there after Erev Ona, and Tamar is with Yehuda, and it continues with Rus and Boaz, right? So this, how many stories? Lot and Yehuda and Rus and Boaz, right? All those stories make up David HaMelech's family, and then of course Rus HaMoaviyah, the Moabites. So what exactly is the message of this pattern of murkiness, of mystery that David HaMelech has, right? This lack of purity, we might even call it. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrate this? Yes, just one note before we give a couple of ideas. In each of the stories, we're not saying that anybody did anything wrong, right? Because as we know, Chazal tell us that in each of the stories, the protagonists were L'shem Shemayim. They thought, let's say, Lot and his daughters, right? They thought that this was going to be they were the last ones left in the world. They thought the whole world was destroyed, right? It wasn't so long ago that there was the story of the Mabul. So why did Hashem leave us alive? It must be that He wants us to procreate with our father. Why else would He have left us alive? So Lot and his daughters, they were L'shem Shemayim in the story. Tamar had Ruach HaKodesh, that she was supposed to have a child with this family, whether it was from Yehuda or whether from his sons. So that's what she knew. The Ramban talks about that in Parshas Vayeshev, right? Some type of Yibum was taking place, right? An early form of Yibum, the Ramban writes. V'anochon b'enai shehaya shela ro'i liyavim. Avolo ratza aviv sheyibemosa v'odenu na'ar. Pen yechte baka achiv kasher mesu b'nureyem kinarim ayu. Right, they were young. See, Yehuda wanted to for his son to wait. She had this taiva to be molid zera kodesh. So again, Tamar was l'shem Shemayim. She wasn't. She acted like a zona on the outside, but obviously she wasn't, right? And we know Rus was going to be redeemed, but Boaz told her to do it. She was also L'shem Shemayim. So all the people involved were L'shem Shemayim, and that's we're not blame. There's no blame here. The question, though, is looking at the big picture. This is the background of David HaMelech. So the question is, what exactly is the message for us, knowing this reality? A lot of it having to do with today's daf, with the story of Doeg and the conversation with, finally, a defending David, but why did you even need this? So, four ideas in the Mefarshim relating to this. The first might be an idea mentioned based on the Gemara in Meseches Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma mentions, on Daf Chav Beis, that Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Mibnei Ma Lo Nimshecha Malchus Beishol. Why did Shaul HaMelech's Malchus not last? Shaul was the king, it didn't last. Dove has lasted. Mibnei Shalo Haya Bal Shum Dofi. What we would call, there were no, Shaul HaMelech did not have any skeletons in the closet. He had nothing to hide. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishim Rabbi Shimon Ben Yehotzadok, Ein Ma'amidim Parnas Al Atzibur. You know what the greatest leaders are? Ela Im Kim Kupa Shal Shratzim Tuli Lo Me'achorav. Literally, if there is a sack of Tamei rodents in his knapsack, it means if there's something behind him that he's always looking back to, that's going to keep him in check. Shim tazuach daitolav. So if the person's mind, you know, rises and he acts, thinks of himself arrogantly, Omrimlo will say, chazalach harecha, look behind you. find you. So it's always good to have something to hide so that it doesn't go to one's head. So that's what the Gemara says about Shaul and David. So Shaul had nothing to hide. So maybe that's why he was too up, so to speak, you know, whatever the Ruach Ra means in the Psukim, but he didn't have anything to hide, and therefore his mouth was didn't lay. As David HaMelech, he had what to hide. He had what to hide, so to speak. And the Gemara, the Chizkuni uses this also in the context of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu's parents were an illicit relationship that was going to become Aser after the Torah was given. Right? His parents were an aunt and a nephew. Right? Yocheved and Amram. Mashe Hiskim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chizkuni and Shmos Perek Vav. Mashe Hiskim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. She Yatsa Adam Gadol. Kimoshe. Mili Kuchim. She Asid Lahazhir Aleihem. Right? In the future, the Torah was going to warn about this type of relation. Right, exactly this idea, right? That's from that's the Chizkuni, right? It also connects to an idea that the Ran mentions in his Drushas. The Ran mentions in Drosh Achadasar, we know every Jew has to have a Sefer Torah. Every Jew has to write a Sefer Torah. But the king has to have two Sefer Torah. One that he leaves in his house, in his palace, and the other one that he carries with him all the time. All the time. Amazing. The Gemara says he goes out to breakfast, he has to carry the Sefer Torah with him. He goes to important meetings, he has to have the Sefer Torah with him. Right? He goes out to war, he has to have the Sefer Torah with him. Why does he need an extra Sefer Torah? Right? Every Jew has to have a Sefer Torah. Isn't that enough? Why does he need another Sefer Torah? Says the Ran, in Drosh Achadasar, the 11th Drasha, Ulefisha Koach HaMelech Gadol, because the king has such elastic power, Einanu mishubad lemishpatei haTorah kamo haShofet. He's not subject to the same rules as a judge. A judge has to go based on the Torah, objective law. A king can do whatever he wants, right? There are rights of the king. Vimlo yihi haShalem. We spoke about this a little bit a couple weeks ago when we spoke about Pilegesh, right? According to the Rambam, Pilegesh is only a concubines are only mutter for a king. Right, so it's part of the rights of a king. One of the approaches we said that. V'im lo yeshalim biyiras elokav. If the king wouldn't be perfect in his yirat shamayim, yavola hafriz alamidos. He might go overboard. Yoser mimashi yischai l'tikun aklal. Right, he's only allowed to do whatever he wants l'shem shamayim for the tikun, for the good of society. But if he doesn't have that proper yirat shamayim, then maybe he'll abuse the power. Tzivoshi yisefer Torah motavit. So he always has to have a sefer Torah with him. Shenema, as it says, Kamro va'yegeshivto al kisei mamlachto v'kosav los mishnah Torah zos v'isimo v'karabo ko yemei chayav l'man yirma liyiras Hashem alakav lishbros kol divrei Torah zos v'esachukim ha'ilu la'asosam. So he needs this balance, right? It kind of reminds us a little bit of, we know in Bezdin, when you took a shvua, there was b'dikitas chayfetz. You held the sefer Torah when you took a shvua. Certain shvuas. Right? Like nowadays, when you put your hand on the Bible, but they you take a sefer Torah, you're going to swear falsely holding a sefer Torah. We assume that's a good fear element, that you hold a sefer Torah and now take a shvua. So the king always have to have a sefer Torah with him. Right? It kind of keeps him in check. Right? So that's the first idea that we have, that B'shal HaMelech, and David HaMelech, why David HaMelech has these roots, because it helps keep him in check in terms of the power that he has. Number one. Number two, the Eman Barim Smecha in his Sefer on page Kuf Chav Gimel quotes from the Sifrei HaMekubalim. Again, a big topic, but Sifrei HaMekubalim, he quotes that often when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to bring a great gift to the world, but his Midah of Justice, Midas Hadin, would say, no, people don't deserve it. So Hashem has to get it in under the rug. Sweep it in under the rug so that the Midas Hadid doesn't see it. Shebeisha Hashem Yisparach wrote Salasso, says a davar gadol ba'olam, shenogel el-yonim, b'shmei ha-shamayim, lo-tachtonim ba'aretz, when he wants to bring something into the world that is going to be amazing for the upper worlds, for the lower worlds. He garbs it. He clothes it with many different layers. Even layers that might not appear so seemly, ugly. So that the prosecuting forces that he, Hashem himself, created You know, don't say anything. V'ilmali ha'inasa b'pumbi, if he had done it publicly, take it by olam ha'kadri l'katrig, then the prosecutor in Shemayim would get up and say, do the people deserve this? Do the Jews deserve this? U'midas hadin ha'isa ma'akeves b'davar, and the midas hadin would be ma'akev. Right, and that's what the he quotes from the Shach al HaTorah, and he quotes this that this of to explain David HaMelech. Right, Shachashiv kol his tashlush shel Mashiach shayis al derech. Right, mechu eresu pritzus. The whole line, as we mentioned before, you can explain each case, but it's not pretty. Ela shasak adash baruch hakein kedei lahavi melech haMashiach pesach adas kedei shelo yekatrig amekatrig. Right, so that the Makadrig wouldn't say anything. This David HaMelech is Malchus based David, and Melech HaMashiach. Hashem wanted to get it in, so that the Satan and the others don't say this. Then he quotes also from the Magen Meisharim, that's the Beis Yosef Sefer of what Oli learned from the Malach, the Hamalach Gilo Rabbeinu Beis Yosef, Sheitzrich David Umalka Mashiachah, the Yesu Meirusa Moavia. Why did David HaMelech and Melech HaMashiach have to come from Rus? Mishum Da'al Yedei Kach, Islei Tukfa, Le'iskafa Alahu Sitra. Through this, he's able to conquer the Sitra Achra. Right? So what does that mean? A Kabbalistic idea, but that's the second idea, that the many gifts that Hashem puts in the world are shrouded in unseemly garb. Two. Number three, the Shemi Shmuel. The Shemi Shmuel in Shvuas, Tav Reish Ayin, quotes from his father, from his grandfather, the Kutzker, grandfather the Kutzker, who says one line, De'inyin melucha lo haya nimsa bi Yisrael. This doesn't explain the earlier stories, but at least Amun and Moav. What does a king mean? A king means ruling over fellow Jews. Ruling over. That's not something naturally Jewish. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebazeh. Really, we're on the same team. Really, we're Guf Echad. One Jew does not and should not rule over another Jew. So naturally, being a king is not something that is going to be successful in Yadus, because we don't have that in us. That's not what we're supposed to be, right? The Gemara says in a couple of daf, right? We'll get to this, right? The Gemara says that what are we? Daf ayin tes shlosha shimanim ish beumazu rachmanim baishanim v'gom lechasadim, right? We're gom lechasadim. We take care of each other. So it's not natural to be a king. So says Hashem Yishmuel, that's why David HaMelech needed a little Moabite blood in him, in order for him to then be a successful king. It's an amazing idea. Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldicht, in the Sefer Zichron HaRav, expands upon this, and he says that it's not something that we dream about for our children, not something that is the goal. But again, we needed this klipa, this little bit of Moav, because Moav is midah, one of the means of Moav is geus, to rule over, to be arrogant. So David, obviously, was not totally arrogant, right? You see in Tehillim, you see throughout stories, he was the tremendous Anav, Tolas, Aniv Eloish, but he needed a little bit of this to be able to rule over the people and not be ruled by the people. And many Mefarshim point out that was the chait of Shaul. Shaul always cared about what the Am was thinking. What the Am was thinking, starting with the most famous story, and that's Amalek. Right, when he did not wipe out Amalek, and Shmuel HaNavi says, what's going on here? And Shaul didn't even realize. He says, Hakimosi is Dvar Hashem. Give me a Shkoyach. I fulfilled the word of Hashem. And what does Shmuel say? I hear animals, I hear sheep. What's going on here? I told you to wipe everything out. So what does Shmuel say? Oh, the Am wanted to bring Karbanos. The Am made me do it. Many stories. The Am. The earlier story about I think it was Givon, right, when he was supposed to, or Gilgal, when he was supposed to wait for Shmuel to bring Karbanos, and what happens? He didn't wait, right, in Shmuel Aleph and Perigud Gimel, right, by Yafetz Ha'am Me'olav, in Gilgal, the Am started leaving, and Shmuel's like, okay, I have to bring the Karbanos, the Am is leaving. He was always nervous about what the Am was thinking. And David, and that's why he wasn't a successful king. David HaMelech had this Moabite blood in him, and he was a successful king, and he ruled over. And there are other stories also in Tanakh that are explained like this, why David kept the Malchus even though he sinned, while Shaul did not keep the Malchus, because the Sefer HaYikarim explains, because David's sins were personal. Okay, everybody has Tivus. I mean, our Tivus are not like David HaMelech's Tivus. We can't even fathom David HaMelech's level. But they were personal. Shaul's Chatoim had to do with being a king, and that's what made it worse. Right? That's the Sefer HaYikarim in Ma'amar Revi. Okay, there's a lot more. That's number three. The fourth and final idea we'll mention is from Rav Soloveitchik, where he talks about what's the common thread in all of the stories, Lot and Rus and Yehuda and Tamar, and David HaMelech. In all of the stories looked hopeless. It looked like it was dark, it was bleak, there was no future. And it all represented people, mostly women, who said, no, we're going to dream of a better tomorrow. We're going to be optimistic. Through the darkness, we're going to dream of redemption. Right? And that was Lot's daughters, and that was Tamar, and that was Rus, and that's David HaMelech. Right? That's the common thread. The common thread is, and that's the foundation of Malchus Beis David. Through darkness, through difficulties, through tsaris, we always look ahead and we always dream of a future. Rav Soloveitchik says, right after a kfura takes place, what happens? A Jew turns around and says the kaddish that has to do with Tchias HaMeisim. Right at the harshest of times, right? We have this ability to believe in a future, and a future that's that's not on the horizon yet. But it's something that we believe in, and maybe that's what Machlas Beis David needed to be based on. It needed to be based on this idea of optimism and being able to believe through the toughest of times. Those are four ideas relating to Machlas Beis David and the Yichus of Machlas Beis David having to do here with Yevamis on Daf Ayin Vav. Okay, we'll stop here.